Now, here's Jane Caro to tell us about Renew Newcastle.
Lots of people just can't wait to leave their small hometown. Many of them leave in their early 20s wanting to explore the world. Perhaps their hometown felt too small, not exciting enough, or the economic reality meant it was just too hard to get a job. Well, you're about to meet a man who's never given up on the place where he grew up. Arts commentator Marcus Westbury was born in Newcastle in New South Wales. The city's port is a gateway for the world's largest export of coal. But over recent decades, the Newcastle CBD has pretty much died. There are over 130 empty buildings in the two main streets of the city centre. Now in his 30s, Marcus has returned to his hometown to try and revitalise the two main streets. He's working on a project called Renew Newcastle and joins me on Life Matters. Hi, Marcus.
Good morning. Hi.
What's the philosophy behind the project?
At a basic level, Newcastle has this problem of all these empty buildings in the main streets. And what we've done is set up a system so that while they're sitting empty, we can borrow them from the people that own them and make them available to people who may not have much money but may have really good ideas for things that they can do in them and create in them. And in doing so, we're basically creating a strategy that brings the city back to life.
And I hear that when you were 18, you were walking through the streets with your friend, imagining a world where all the empty buildings were, as you say, filled with life. So tell me about this, you know, very early genesis of the project.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is an idea that's been with me for about as long as I can remember. I'm 35 now, so I realise it was basically about half my life ago that my friend Sean and I, who had gone on to, he and I founded a lot of sort of cultural events and projects together down the years. But one of the things we first bonded over was walking down the streets of Newcastle, looking in the windows of the empty buildings and thinking up great sort of fantastic and at the time probably quite ludicrous ideas for things that we wanted to do in them. And unfortunately then, as until very recently, there really was no system to allow people who are creative or who have things that they might be able to do and get into some of these spaces and bring them to life. There's kind of basically a kind of an economic failure in that there are so many empty buildings and yet they're not actually cheap enough or accessible enough or flexible enough to be made available to the people who can afford to use them and do things with them, or at least until we set up this system.
Right. But to get back to the hometown thing again, what made you, Marcus, persevere and not simply walk away from it?
Look, I love Newcastle. I stayed there until my mid-20s. I mean, a lot of people tend to leave the place they grew up straight out of school or at the first opportunity, and I stayed there for a long time. I was involved in doing quite a few festivals and events and projects and starting different sort of community things there. And then at some point, the sort of economics of your life kind of drives you away. And, I'm trying to think if I've ever had a paid job in Newcastle. I'd be struggling to think if I have. The reality of the place is, I mean, when I left school there was about 40-something% youth unemployment. So it was pretty tough to make a living there. And then over the years, that's driven me away to Sydney and Melbourne now, where I've been able to do, you know, I've had a lot of success in other things that I've been doing and it's been great, but I've never really let go of the idea. I go back to Newcastle a fair bit, and I think in one sense that the sort of emptying out of the inner city is much more obvious to me as someone who goes away and comes back than if you live there, because if you live there you sort of, you know, one, you know, some shop closes down this week and you sort of don't really think about it too much. If you go away and come back and go on away and come back, you can see this kind of time lapse effect where you're suddenly staring at a block and thinking, last time I really looked at this block there was a lot of things here and now there's nothing. And so, you know, that sense of you know, being back and forth all the time and sort of witnessing this happen has always been in the back of my mind. And then last year, the year before last, actually, I got a chance to make a TV series, or I've made a couple now for the ABC, called Not Quite Art. And the very first episode of the first series was really looking at this idea of where culture comes from. And I went to Newcastle and compared it to Glasgow, which is another city with a sort of similar dynamic, but a much more vibrant sort of cultural scene. And in part because of these kind of strategies, because they're about getting people to do things. And then, you know, if you ever want to get, you know, a change made somewhere, it's I strongly recommend having a TV series. It's a really excellent way of putting an issue on the agenda and getting people to talk about things that they might not otherwise talk about. So
certainly resonates with me.
Yeah, that certainly just puts you in a position to you know, I suddenly found myself last year in a position where people were coming to me to talk to me about this problem, and people who could actually do something about it. And then suddenly I was obliged, you know, put my money where my mouth is and get serious about doing something about it.
Yeah, and I mean, Newcastle's had a hell of a history, really, hasn't it? I mean, we've seen the shutdown of BHP, which has affected the town, but also the building of mammoth shopping centres away from the city. How's that affected the city's culture?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big problem in Newcastle. People tend to look at Newcastle's got a very weird sort of, it's an unusual distinctive dynamic, which is the old centre of the city isn't the centre. It's actually on sort of one edge of the area where people live. It evolved from the days of public transport, and it's got this long main street where the trams used to run, and the trains used to bring everyone into town. And nowadays, that's not the shopping pattern anymore. So there are a whole series of quite successful booming shopping centres out in the suburbs. It's not, people look at all the empty buildings in the main street and think that the entire economy is left. It's not that bad. It's just that the changing patterns have meant that that part of town has a very, its old use doesn't make sense anymore. And so like a lot of cities, I guess like any city or any town where the old main street has been supplanted by a shopping centre on the edge of town, it's got this kind of hollowed out empty shops effect.
Mm-hmm. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Jane Caro, and I'm talking now with arts commentator Marcus Westbury about the project to renew his hometown. It's called Renew Newcastle. So tell me about some of the buildings you've brought back to life. The Fletcher Jones building is a good example.
Yeah, so we've been quite lucky in that we've managed to convince a bunch of property owners to let us have their building. One in particular, the GPT Group, own a lot of property in the centre of Newcastle for redevelopment that's now not going to go ahead in the near future. And one of the buildings that they own is this Fletcher Jones building. And it was a closed store until, I'm not sure, probably 5 years ago at a guess. And like any of these buildings all have real history. They're not just empty buildings. They're actually, places that were once part of people's lives. I was out the front looking at this building, and a woman came up to me who was, I'm assuming, probably in her 70s, and explained that her husband bought the suit for their wedding at this shop, and she was so pleased to see that it was open again. And so that's a building that's been sitting empty for a while. We've got a group of artists in there. It's now a gallery. It's been running as a gallery since February. It's a sound and multimedia gallery. There's now a rolling program of events and activities. It's bringing people to the city, and it shares this sort of strip of half a dozen shops with other places. Everything from crafts to photo galleries to people who make their own clothes, bags, jewellery, etc. It's about getting that kind of creative energy in the community and getting it onto the street.
Great. And you've got another story about the church. A woman showed you the press clipping from the last service there.
Yeah. One of the first buildings that we took on was a church, which had not been empty all that long. It had been empty for about 3 years, I think. But by Newcastle standards, that's not too bad. But the church had been a Catholic church, and it had closed down a few years ago. I'm assuming just mainly due to changing patterns of congregations and where people were living. But we have since moved into it, and we're using that as an administrative centre, and also holding our public meetings there for the project. And we held a meeting and a tour. And the next day, a woman came back and gave me a clipping of from when the church had closed down, which was almost 3 years, I think, to the day that we had reopened it again for this project. And obviously, she'd been a parishioner in the church there for a long time, and that building meant a lot to her. It had a lot of history to her. So she was just delighted to see that we were in there and making it active and making use of it again.
Mm. From a planning point of view, how have you managed to keep this project going? Haven't planning laws and red tape got in the way a bit for you?
Yeah, it's actually not all that easy to do this stuff. Essentially, we've been very lucky. A local law firm, Spark Elmore, have done a lot of pro bono work for us in setting up these basic agreements that allow us to access the spaces in an ongoing way. And basically, the standard deal is that we borrow a space for 30 days at a rolling 30-day period, so that if the owner gets a better offer or a commercial offer, or their redevelopment is going ahead or whatever, they can take the building back. In our case, what this means is then that it's very difficult to find uses that actually fit the pre-existing development consents. And for a rolling 30-day basis, it's not actually worth your while. It's so expensive and so difficult in terms of being able to vary any usages that it becomes quite problematic. And there's examples now. The UK is rolling out a similar scheme nationwide now. They've got a similar problem with empty shops in main streets in towns and in parts of even in parts of London. So what they've been doing is introduce a whole package of incentives that are both financial but also just about making the red tape and the regulation that covers temporary usages easier, because we don't have a system of temporary use. We don't have a set of strategies that are about doing things in the short term. And our project is very much based around the idea that the people that we're getting into the spaces don't have much capital. So once you've got to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars just to get permission to do something, you've probably blown the whole budget for the whole project.
Yeah, speaking of capital, you recently criticised an announcement from the New South Wales government about the planned $1 billion makeover of the Sydney Opera House, saying it could seed fund, I love this, 66,666 Renew Newcastles. Could that be seen as sour grapes, Marcus?
A little bit. Yeah, I'll take that. But I think the larger point I'm trying to make is that I think we make, in terms of cultural policy, I think we make some really false assumptions, and that is that culture comes from places like the Opera House. And it, in that context, it makes sense to spend $1 billion to renovate. You know, it's a serious debate about whether to spend $1 billion to renovate the Opera House and return it to its original vision. However, trying to start new projects like this, I mean, basically, you know, I've had to do this on my credit card, you know. So we're now in a position after 9 months of operation where we are getting funding from the New South Wales government. I'm very grateful for that, and that allows us to now have a manager on the ground in Newcastle, so I don't need to be there all the time. And, you know, there's a lot of great benefits. However, I think that, you know, essentially we've sort of got two arts and cultural worlds, one that has huge budgets and enormous amounts of resources where amounts of $1 billion make sense. And then there's another one at the other end of the spectrum where there's almost no resources, you know, even for projects that have such obvious demonstrated benefits as the one that we've been involved in. As I said, I mean, I've been running the festival in Newcastle for 5 years, which was the largest tourism event in the city, and now this project, I have never been paid for any of it.
Marcus, you're a champion, I tell you what. Listen, Marcus, I'm sorry, we could go on about this for much longer. It's fascinating, and I really commend what you're doing, but time is a tyrant, so thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Marcus Westbury speaking with Jane Caro about Renew Newcastle. That's all for Life Matters today. Join me tomorrow, though, when we hear about the early years of Australia's number one choir master, Jonathan Welch, and feminist Eva Cox on being a grandmother. I'm Richard Adie. Bye for me, but stay listening, because there's more great summer listening after the news.